I don't have a gavel, but I call this meeting to order with my pen.
That counts.
Can I do that?
Very cool. Well, I wanted to start by saying that I sent out an agenda with sort of a sequence of subjects and how long I thought they would all take. And then after that, I got some really good materials from our consultants, and it led me to revisit sort of the way that I suggested it was that we move forward. And so instead, I think I wanted to share some preliminary existing conditions work with the group and then take a little bit more time. I think I only allowed 5 minutes on the agenda for that. And it deserves definitely more than that, although I can't fully represent it because I'm still digesting it myself. But I think it's pretty interesting and helps to characterize the need. So if it's okay with a group, I'll sort of shift stuff around. And I've got a PowerPoint that I would propose to share with the group. And I'll start. Let's see here. Share my screen.
Elliot, is this like a more general, or will this same information be what is presented in that meeting on November 18th with the Planning Commission? Are these the same consultants and the same like existing conditions that we'll be talking about? Is this same information?
Yes. Same consultants and same existing conditions. And also, you know, a lot of the same, well, basically, yes, the same material. We've been preparing a package of information that we're bringing out to a series of different meetings in November. And we already kind of rolled out a version of this last week with the AHAS technical advisory group. And after this on Tuesday, we're going to the city council and we're going to do a version of this same presentation. And so the objectives right now, I've got a couple of slides in. Show you now what that looks like. Yeah, so we're now able to sort of report on what the current needs are, housing needs, based on roots analysis. We've done some additional work to summarize what the policy background is. Wanted to share a version of that with you. And then how are we doing our work? How are we moving forward? And then finally, what I'd love to get the most time on is policy scenarios. I've tried to sort of frame up the questions we've been talking about, diverse housing types and affordable housing tools. What does that exactly look like and mean? And I think it'd be great to have the preliminary input from the task force when we go to talk with council next Tuesday, so that we can then report to them, you know, what you all have to say and where you think this project should be going. So that's what I was hoping to communicate today. I've got a lot of slides on this deck, but a lot of them I just want to breeze through because it's especially the existing condition stuff. It's actually not subject that I am the full master of. I'm still absorbing it myself, but I did think it was worth sharing with you guys. There's a lot of material, but I can breeze through a lot of it. Does that sound okay?
Sounds excellent to me. Everybody else?
And before I start my spiel here, I wanted to, do these housekeeping things. Did anybody have a chance to review the notes from the previous meeting? And were there any questions or changes that anybody noticed there? Okay, great. Well, then we'll leave those standing as they are. The other thing that is really important for you all to know is that I think it was 2 weeks ago now, the city council, they were actually adopting the residential infill pilot program 2.0, which is, you know, kind of our trial of allowing more different housing types in our neighborhoods. And council adopted that. They're very excited about it. But as part of their action adopting it, they directed staff to move a lot more quickly to really move forward with the work that we're doing with the Home in Tacoma project. And they actually said, don't just study this stuff, you know, yes, do our study, but come forward to the council with changes at the policy level in our comprehensive plan by May, June. And then actually do the zoning changes in the 6 months after that. And that's significant for us as we do our work because it, you know, first of all, it tells us clearly that council is very excited about this work and wants to do big things and do them quickly. And then secondly, it also gives us, you know, kind of our marching orders about what we have to accomplish in the time that we have. So I just wanted to, that was my kind of report out. And then this is also kind of a time in the meeting that other task force members could report. Does anybody have anything that you'd like to share? I do have space on here next to talk about the benchmarking conversations, because that's one of the things that we've done since the last meeting. So I'll go ahead and do that. So we spoke with staff from the three jurisdictions that we looked at last time, Minneapolis, Portland, and Seattle. And man, it was really interesting. And I learned a lot. Commissioner Givens was there too. Commissioner Lemons joined as well. And I kind of wrote up here that I thought that there were some really consistent themes across those cities that we talked to, and a lot of lessons for the city of Tacoma. I felt as though they defined the problem really in the same way across those three cities, which was that we have a lot of growth coming. It's driving up the cost of housing. The housing crisis is especially impacting lower income people. There's that clear correlation with people of color who tend to have lower incomes on average. Each one of those three cities had a recognition that they needed to reach out to people of color and to lower income people to empower them in policymaking. And they all had this clear recognition that, our high opportunity neighborhoods tend to be mostly white, and that's not equitable, that the benefits are going to one group rather than going equitably to our community. And they also all recognize that our growing areas are seeing displacement as the growth occurs. So, like a mirror image of the things that we are trying to wrestle with here in Tacoma. And those three cities that we looked at, they all sort of move forward with a very parallel package of actions. First and foremost, they did try to reach out and empower groups that weren't usually part of policymaking. And then they all looked at opening up single family areas to allow mid-scale housing types. And they all looked at affordability and anti-displacement tools. Very much a parallel to the Home in Tacoma project. That was my take on it. I felt it was, very affirming of the approach that we're taking here. But I wonder if, Commissioner Givens or anybody else who participated has any other perspective on those conversations.
Are you calling on me?
If you have anything to add.
Well, yeah, and I thought I like that everything was really data driven rather than, hey, we want to upzone areas of your city. It's really kind of like, there's a lot of people in need and here's some ways that we can help them. One thing that was kind of compelling from Minneapolis is that the staff came up with an engagement plan and had council buy off on it before they did it. So then, halfway through the process, affluent neighborhoods wouldn't ask for kind of more than their proportionate share of staff time. And then also I heard, while it's really good to engage with the neighborhood councils, the participation tends to be property owners that participate in that, so not to rely solely on your neighborhood councils in order to get feedback. Go to people who actually provide services and actually go to the people who might be in need. So I don't know if I articulated that very well, but that was compelling to me.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Okay, so when you talk about affordability and anti-displacement tools, so you're talking about intentionality, the, you know, being intentional about what you're doing. How does it work as far as, so you do the infill and in that, like you do open in the, you open up in single family to infill and mid-scale housing types, and then people purchase those and then they rent them out. How do you make sure that they're rented out to people who would be able, would provide that mix of that you're looking for, that's, that would have been displaced in certain places? I mean, I'm just trying to, so for instance, I've built a lot of housing up on, my husband and I and our friend who's a developer, we've built a lot of housing up on the hilltop. And so we have displaced people. But then what I do is I rent my properties for less than actual market rate, so I can get people who can afford, you know, that may not be able to afford to live there. And I get a lot of diversity, a lot of people of color who rent from me, and I do it on purpose. How do you get that model to actually make people want to do what I'm doing? How do you make that happen? Is my question.
Great question. I think there are some tools that I'm aware of, but others that may, that I hope that we will learn about through the study and that our consultants can bring to our attention. One tool is inclusionary zoning. Hi, Commissioner Lemons. I hope your other meeting went well. Good to see you. Yeah, but one tool is to actually you know, create dedicated affordable units in projects, in the new buildings or new developments that, as they come in. That's not necessarily a one-to-one of a person that was displaced is guaranteed a spot in a building. I think there are ways that those policies could be put together to even give preference to people who are actually from that neighborhood. But at least you are creating, you know, a diverse range of housing costs in the neighborhood along with development. So I think we'll hear other tools though as we move forward with this project. Anything else about the Commissioner Lemons? We were actually just quickly debriefing from the three benchmarking conversations that we had. You participated in those, and if you have anything to share with the group, love to hear it. Anything struck you from those?
You're talking about the conversations with folks from different cities?
Right.
Oh, yeah. I thought they were really awesome. I was able to sit in two, I believe. I've been in so many meetings, I can't even remember. But they were really informative. The lady, I can't think of her name, the one from
Minneapolis.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
That's Elliot. I remember that because my name.
Last name. Yes. She had such positive energy. And I really appreciated a lot of the information she shared. And I am working to connect with another individual from Portland to talk more about their equity work with the city. So it was really informative. It was a really good opportunity to listen to some successful things or some kind of barriers that popped up when they were engaging in their community engagement. So it was a really good opportunity. Very glad you invited me.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you were there. Great. Well, if anybody else wants more information, I took notes from each of those and I actually recorded. I did Teams recordings of two of the three meetings. I didn't know how to do that for the first one. So if anybody's real curious about it, I'd be really happy to share either the notes or the recordings. Just let me know, you know, send me an email or let me know during the meeting tonight.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd love to listen to the conversation and see what you all talked about.
Okay. Actually, I'm not sure who said that. Sorry.
It's Julie. But I think Alyssa also said she would like it as well. Maybe would it be okay if you just sent it out to the whole group, just in case?
Yeah, absolutely. I will do that. Okay.
I have a comment in regard to the slide and the issues it raises. The targeted engagement with people of color and lower income people, I think, is overlaps with what you guys ask our housing task force to do, to come up with a much expanded list of organizations that can be contacted for reactions. And we're in the process of doing that. I had emptied about a third of my Rolodex into that list. But my other reaction is that empowerment is not accomplished by a one-time presentation to a group. There has to be a process that actually, on a continuing basis, either involves the group in giving comments and then coming back to them with feedback about how their comments were incorporated or received. And I can't see that in this particular slide, but I think that process of quote engagement has to be really carefully thought through. And we do have, Julie, what's that list we've been building on for contacts?
Our community engagement list that we're still kind of doing a rough outline on, and hopefully we'll get something out sent out so the rest of the task force to see and add to soon.
Thank you. Yeah, that would be really great.
I think I shared the list with Andrita and Elliot. Let me know if you don't have access to it. But Al, what you said is pretty much what Ms. Elliot from Minnesota said with their engagement, is that their city was super big on neighborhood council meetings or neighborhood councils, you know, and they had a lot of the power, but they were not the community. They weren't the communities that they wanted to try and engage. They wanted to try and engage communities that often have trouble, you know, getting to those meetings, or really just the lower income Black and Brown folks in Minnesota. So they targeted groups that they did that reoccurring engagement with. So they would, you know, meet with them, gather information, do some work, and then go back and meet with that specific group. And they did that, you know, for I think a year and a half or 2 years. So it was a long process, but it was continued engagement and like trust building and listening and, you know, fulfilling the needs of those communities. So it was really cool.
Well, yeah, and I agree with all that. I actually worked in Minnesota, but it was up on the Iron Ridge, and there were only Scandinavians and folks up there. My list includes a number of organizations that have participants or customers who are Black or Brown folks. My assumption is that the contacts could be made through those organizations. They could recruit some of the people that they serve to give input to this process, and that would be a way to broaden your outreach. And at that point, I'll shut up and go back to my dinner.
Well, that's, I appreciate those comments, and we're finally kind of at the point of doing a public request or invitation to engage in this project. We've taken more time to put together some educational materials. We're gonna have what's called a story map on the project webpage that tries to explain the background on these issues, because people don't just know this stuff. There's a short video that's already posted on the Home in Tacoma page. And we're also putting together a survey so that we can try and gather information from a lot of people. That won't be the only engagement that we do, but that's one way we'll engage with folks. And so I mention that because I hope that you all will make sure that we have the latest list. It sounds like, Michelle, you've already shared it with us, so thank you. But then also, once you see the press release go out, and I'm going to send out an email update to folks, I hope you will all do us a service by sharing that again with your own networks, and even amplifying it if it's to groups that have already received it from us. That's okay, especially if it comes, you know, with an introduction from you. So be asking you, and also asking other groups as we meet with people over the next few months to do that. All right, I'm gonna keep on cruising ahead.
Are those like the survey, I think I saw the video earlier today and the story map, are those things that you're going to share with us first, or is that just going public immediately? And if so, like, what's the process of it going public? Like you said, the announcement, but like, are you sharing it directly to certain groups on that list? Is that the idea?
Yeah. So we'll do a press release, and then I've been gathering emails from people, and we'll send out, you know, an announcement, and then that group will get regular project updates. And no, I'm not planning to share the actual drafts of those tools with the Housing Equity Task Force beforehand, partly just because of the timing of the project. It's later than I was planning to have this sort of public announcement. And we really can't afford to wait another month before launching them. But we have built those tools, the story map and the survey, taking into account all the input that the task force has given us about how to do engagement, making sure that we reach out to underrepresented groups, providing a lot of education, doing it in plain language. And so when you see it, I hope that you'll be pleased and see that it reflects the input that you've given to us. And if you do see something that you don't think hits the mark, let us know, because we can make adjustments as we move forward too. So, okay, well, if there, can I go ahead and give you kind of an overview about what we've learned from our consultants about Tacoma's housing need?
Elliot, I think Sarah had a question about how we could share the information with renters, as they might have good information for us.
Okay, thank you for telling me. I'm having a hard time getting everybody's pictures on my screen here.
So I was thinking that, you know, because you have to have a if you have a legal rental, you have to have a application with the city of Tacoma to rent a unit. And would it be possible to get the information out to renters so that, I mean, because we're missing a whole group of people that might be good to answer this, that may provide some diversity, especially depending on where they're renting in our community. It's just a thought, because people who are actually renting can tell you, you know, what their scenario is. And this woman I just rented to, she was paying $1,900 and she was earning $2,400 a month. And she was paying $1,900 a month for a place to rent in Tacoma. And I've met a whole bunch of people like that, and they all have stories, and I would hate for them not to have a voice, if that's possible, in what we're doing, if that's at all convenient or a way we could reach out to them.
Yeah. Thank you for that question. I will see what kind of information that we can get. And also just, you know, welcome further thoughts. And, you know, I think a lot of my strategy is to try and delegate partner organizations to share it with their stakeholder groups. I'm not sure that we have, for example, a list of Tacoma renters there, but then again, there are, you know, for example, the renters advocacy group that the city has been working with, and, you know, we can share it through those channels that we have. We still need all the help that we can get to try to amplify it. For example, I spoke last week with the Homeless Coalition, because we want to hear from people who are experiencing homelessness. That's a group of folks that don't usually get to participate in policymaking. And I'm going to go back to that group once we have the survey posted online and ask those service providers to try to help get feedback directly from their customers. So that's just one example, and I'm happy to do that kind of work to target outreach to other groups. And I'm open to any suggestions or any connections that you can help me to make on that.
Sarah, you said there was some kind of a permit that renters have to,
So people who rent have to get an application, they have to fill out a rental application with the city because it's like you're doing a business. And so you pay a fee to rent a unit in the city of Tacoma. So they have a huge, list of people who actually are renting. Like they don't have the renter's name, but they have the name of the owner. So I'm just thinking, I mean, how could we reach out to renters? And that's not what I'm thinking about.
That's a great question, and I'll see what I can find out internally with my colleagues in city departments about finding a list like that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay.
And Elliot, if I may just add quickly, I put it in the chat, but I just wanted to say it out loud to everybody that we are working on rental housing code updates, such as shared housing, just cause eviction, and things like that. And so we've already been making sure that the Home in Tacoma project is wrapped into that so that we can make sure that we're getting their feedback and listening to what they want and need as well. So happy to hear any input that you all have about how to best do that, but I just wanted to let you know that is absolutely on our radar.
Thank you, Jacques. All right, so I have, let's see here. All right, so I'm gonna sort of give you my non-expert perspective on the information that our consultants have assembled on our existing conditions. So we asked our consultants to do an analysis building on the work from the Affordable Housing Action Strategy of what's our current housing situation in terms of our housing need. And so these are some of their preliminary findings. This is still kind of a sneak peek. They're still developing this work, but they reached a point where we can share it with you. And the long story short here, problems are just continuing to get worse. And this is not even really looking at the emerging needs that are coming as a result of COVID-19 and all of people's, the instability and income insecurity that people are having right now. But just even not looking at that, we can see that rents are increasing faster than incomes, that, you know, home values are increasing faster than homeowner incomes as well, and that as a result, we are losing housing for people who are at the lower end of our income scale. So this is really confirming the problem that the AHAS has already identified, and but their analysis is going to take it into the current time. And Tacoma is still relatively affordable in the region. And here you can see that, you know, by comparison to other nearby counties, ownership and rental costs are relatively low. But incomes are not keeping pace with housing costs. And that's true for ownership and rental markets. And what's happening? Well, the low-income households are being priced out. And here you can see that, you know, even over time, over the last decade, there are fewer of those more affordable housing units over time, and there are more and more of the higher cost housing units in our housing market. And just another data point, the costs for ownership and for rental are continuing to increase quickly, which is no surprise to us. And there's a shortage of those rental units that are affordable especially to folks that are below below a moderately low income level. And this is absolutely mirroring the conclusions that we got from the Affordable Housing Action Strategy. And they've also got some interesting data about how households are changing over time. Households are getting smaller and our communities getting older. There's a couple of conclusions there. And so, you know, does that, that starts to, you know, raise questions about whether we should be looking at diversifying our housing types as opposed to just the single family detached housing model that we have so much of in Tacoma. Yeah, so special needs populations are increasingly vulnerable. So here, this graphic here is showing the poverty rate and different groups here in Tacoma that are particularly likely to be below the poverty rate. And you know, my take home from this is that single mothers, people with disabilities, are particularly vulnerable, and also that there's a connection with race. So down here at the bottom, you see African Americans are particularly likely to be below the poverty rate. So again, no surprises compared to the data that we've already gotten from our other efforts, but this certainly confirms that there is a big problem and that it affects particular groups disproportionately. Racial and ethnic minorities face inequities. You can see that in the homeownership rate. And this graphic here shows Tacoma compared to other counties, and including Pierce County. And you can see that African Americans have a lower percentage of homeownership. They are less likely to be homeowners, and similarly with Asian, Hispanic, and then non-Hispanic white is at the upper end. So again, no surprise, but confirming that there really are disproportionate impacts.
Elliot, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
The earliest of the slides in this series were the ones focused on income and cost of housing. Is there any chance your consultants can do a breakout of those by census tract or anything to see where those issues are scattered throughout the city rather than just an aggregate figure?
Absolutely. They are doing that work. We have a kind of a draft of a much more detailed report that is informing these slides here. These are just the high points. And if you had our consultants from Root here, they'd be able to give you a lot more rich analysis of what this data shows than I can. I am sharing this with you, but really I'm not an expert on this data quite yet. I will be learning about this in the coming weeks. So we can share, we can pass your question on to Root Policy, and we'll also be sharing the full report with the Housing Equity Task Force as soon as it's finalized, which we expect probably in the next week or two.
Well, when you get those zip code type or census tract type data, it might be a good idea to include a slide that visualizes how the different census tracts compare throughout the city.
Yes, thank you. We have a lot of that data in our fingertips, and we absolutely can show that visually. And so just another snapshot confirming that we have real inequities that racial and ethnic groups face, and that in particular African American households have a lower rent that they can afford at this time. And then the last slide in this series is that you're probably familiar with the map on the left. This is our opportunity map that was done through the city's equity index effort. And on the side over here, you've got home values. And not surprisingly, the areas that have high opportunity in terms of all sorts of different indicators from household income, education level, to things like access to parks and schools and transportation choices. The Equity Index is a great data source that really documents the differences by our neighborhoods that people have in terms of the opportunities that they can take advantage of. So that correlates with home values. And the conclusion is that those high opportunity areas are just getting more and more expensive, and they're out of reach for many Tacomans. So that is my, that's the end of what I wanted to, or what I'm really able to share with you about this sort of analysis of our existing conditions. Any questions about that before I move on? Okay, hearing none, I'll go ahead and, so we know that there's a problem. This is a problem that has been documented in previous city efforts.
Hey, Elliot?
Yes, yeah.
I'm sorry, I couldn't get to the mute button fast enough. Just a quick language thing. I think I'd be curious what the commissioners feel, but I would strongly encourage a change in language from ethnic and racial minorities to communities of color.
Yeah, does the group concur with that?
And also, when you talk about the different ethnicities, do we really say African-American still? And also Hispanic, is that necessarily what people are calling people? I've had talks with people about the word Latinx, Latina. I want to be sure that we're sensitive to what people want us to be. It's hard when you start talking about this stuff now, and I would like other people's opinion who are sitting on our board, on our commission, to speak up, please.
Yeah, I definitely support what Jacques recommended with communities of color. And to Sarah's comment about African-American versus Black, I think I understand the struggle with when you do research. The research will classify certain groups certain ways. So like even with the stuff that we do with PCAF, you know, it'll look like Hispanic, non-Hispanic, Latino or Latina. And although that's not necessarily how we like to identify those groups, I see why it comes up like that. So I think that I appreciate the call to, you know, even though research may say it like that, just taking ownership. My experience is to say Latinx, to take out the gender. And with the African American, that's a hard one. Some people like to be considered African American. Some people like to be considered Black. So my suggestion would probably be just stick with African American or interchangeable, and say African American and Black community.
I'll jump in real quick to say that as Commissioner Lemons pointed out, I think there's some issue of sort of standardized data sources and the terms that are used on the census. And so there are probably times when we kind of need to use those terms, but that doesn't mean we can't use the terms that our communities most identify with at other times. And I certainly appreciate the point about communities of color. I'll convey that to our consultants, because that has come up in several forums that's their preferred term for our Tacoma community. All right, so I am. Is there some, was there somebody trying to say something? I'm sorry.
It was Jacques again. I'm gonna put into the chat the terms that we have been using at the city, because like you're saying, there is no one right answer, but not all Black people are African American, and we do have to recognize that the census is not the most racially and ethnically forward thinking government document. So I'm going to put into the chat what we have been using at the city in general, and would love feedback from commissioners once you have a chance to look at that.
That would be great. Thank you. Okay. Yes. So the next thing I was hoping to share with you all. Oh, sorry. I think I see another hand.
Jack sent an email with that list. I never had figured out how to get to the chat after we've been through or are through with a meeting.
I'm glad you said that. I'm having a little trouble myself. I see Commissioner Givens, you raised your hand, I think.
Yeah, I one thing whenever I see data, I really like to see that segment of like cost burden housing. So folks that are paying 30% or more of their income on housing, because that's like really compelling, especially when we get people on our side.
Thank you. Yeah, I believe that you know, we certainly have that data, and we can make sure that that's included. Okay, so I wanted to, so we've kind of established that we have a very clear need, that the needs of our community are not being met, and that need is particularly great for communities of color and for lower income people. So, knowing that that's the case, what do our policies say that we should be doing about it? You know, first of all, we've got strong policies that say that we need to meet those affordability needs. And I wanted to share with you kind of our three or four slides that summarize what the city council has already said about these topics of housing and affordability. So we should be trying to provide affordability for people of all income levels. In the comp plan, we have a goal that says that 25% of our new units should be affordable to people who make moderate incomes, which means 80% of our area median income. And in fact, that's really not a very affordable housing unit at all, but that's the one target that we have currently for new housing affordability. So certainly something that we may want to revisit as part of the Home in Tacoma effort here. So we've got policies that say we should be utilizing incentives and bonuses to target unmet housing needs. We're working on that here too. And that we should be prioritizing serving households with the greatest needs. And there's more that we need to do in that regard. But our policies also say that housing should be safe, healthy, accessible, resource efficient, and so we've got some really good policy direction and not all the tools in place to fully meet that yet, which is why we're working on this. We have policies that direct us to try and accommodate growth. I've showed you that slide that shows the whole city of Tacoma, and it says, you know, 60,000, or it says 54,000 new housing units by 2040. So we have that planning goal to make room for more people in our community by making room for more housing units. And our growth strategy says most of those units should be downtown and in our 16 centers around the city of Tacoma. And only 20% should be in other areas, in our single family areas. Well, we're actually not meeting either of those targets. We are growing downtown, but not nearly at the rate we would need to provide 60,000 new units in the next 20 years. And we're even more slower growing outside of our downtown and our centers. So again, that not fully meeting those policies and a good reason to be doing the work that we're doing here. We have a lot of emphasis on accommodating our housing in walkable areas, transit supportive areas. And we also have policy that says provide a variety of types and densities through infill housing, through missing middle housing. But we also currently have policies that say protect the single family areas and don't put more housing in those areas. So I share this with you to say that we're not currently growing, you know, even according to our current growth strategy, and the growth strategy is going to need to be discussed and potentially changed through the Home in Tacoma project to make room for the missing middle housing outside of our centers and corridors. And we've talked a lot in this group about our policy direction to increase equity. We've got clear direction from our council that we need to be including our diverse and representative group in our policymaking efforts. As you know very well, we're working on the city's anti-racism transformation. And I wanted to share with you that we also have policies that say, we know we've got areas that have high first and areas that we have that have low opportunities through our city. And we have some policies that say, but we really should be making room for more people in our high opportunity areas, and in particular for more affordable housing in those areas. We also have policies that say we need to be investing in our areas that are currently lower opportunities to try and bring those areas up and create more opportunities there. And we have policies that say that we should try not to kind of create more displacement, but there's not a really strong kind of policy push to be proactive about that and to really get out in front of growth and prevent displacement as much as we can. So sharing all these policies with you just to sort of say, we've got some great direction and we also have a chance to kind of do better and even expand on the policy direction that we have right now. We also have great kind of related policies that talk about sustainability, that talk about economic growth and prosperity, and even that just talk about being a responsible government and making sure that the policies and tools that we use are going to be effective and are going to be accountable to the community. So sharing all this policy direction with the group to say, we know there's a big need. Council has directed that we work on it from all these different angles. And now we're at the point where I want to ask the Housing Equity Task Force to start digging, rolling your sleeves up. I still have a little more talking to do, but then I want to stop talking and ask the group if you can discuss maybe some recommendations that we can then share with the City Council next week. And last thing before I start talking about those growth scenarios, we've talked a lot in the group about how the task force is going to formulate your recommendations. So we know that we've got all those adopted policies. And so council has given us instructions and we absolutely need to evaluate those. And whatever the group recommends, we need to kind of look at it through the lens of achieving those equity policies. But the task force has also talked about using an equity checklist. And Andrita helped to locate a good example of an equity checklist that's used for policy development. And the questions are ones that are sort of, how can we shape the effort and make sure that we're really doing as much as we can to promote equity? And I thought that this would be a good time to ask the task force whether kind of using these two lenses is a way that you want to try and structure your recommendations moving forward. And Andrita, if you care to kind of give a little bit more background about these equity questions, very welcome.
But you have to turn off. Anything to add necessarily? I've said before, I'll just say again that it's a tool to ensure that the folks that you're trying to help really gets the help, and that you listen to the folks that have been marginalized, disenfranchised. So it's a way that you focus, the group focuses its efforts to ensure that you hit your target. So I don't have, do you all have any questions about an equity checklist? I think that, at least from my perspective, I thought you understood, you know, what that tool is about.
I did have a question.
Michelle, and then Al.
I like the questions. I think that they look similar to some that I saw on the Minneapolis website. And I guess my question is more so, the idea is to take these questions when any new policy is developed and have this as a checklist that needs to be done by city staff. Is that correct?
Yes, it can be used. It can be used that way. Certainly it is, to be used in the way this group operates, and as well as advising the city as a policy. Now, of course, the questions will change depending on the project.
What I think that I'd love to hear from the task force is, are you interested in using a list of questions like these or these very questions to help to guide your recommendations for the Home in Tacoma project?
I have a somewhat different notion about the equity checklist. I liked the ones that have been shown to us as examples, but I see them as examples that get answered at the level of city staff rather than at the level of developers. And that does not necessarily equate with getting developers keyed to the notion that equity is something they have to take into consideration as they make plans to implement new projects. So I would like to see an equity checklist designed to be given to developers perhaps could be voluntary, but at least that they'd have to answer it with some questions about what they're thinking about how their project is going to advance the city's equity goals.
I think that's a wonderful idea. I just want to mention that it can be two-pronged. The city needs some direction too, yeah, as well as developers. So you all may want to have two different instruments, one that would go to developers and the other to city.
I absolutely agree with that. I don't see it as an either or. I think it's both. But so far we don't have any, and I can't find any examples in my limited internet searches of equity questionnaires intended for responses by developers rather than by staff of the planning departments or zoning departments.
Yeah, I agree. I've never heard an example of an equity checklist that's applied to developers. That doesn't mean it can't be something that the task force explores and maybe recommends to be developed. I think in this context, I think staff's asking the task force, you know, how you'd like to structure your recommendations to planning commissions and council about the Home of Tacoma project, and whether a tool like this would be helpful. And staff, you know, we can certainly work to answer these questions, you know, and kind of present you with a staff analysis of proposals moving forward. But would this be a useful lens for us to do our policy analysis with?
I think this guiding framework is really great to kind of like drill down what equity means. Equity can have a lot of different meaning depending on the person using the word or the intentions of the word. And I think that maybe I appreciate the questions. I think they are going to be helpful to us when we start to compare different policies and to be able to have a criteria to kind of critically analyze the different policy options. So I think it's great. The question I have is with to clarify between this other checklist for developers versus this one, there's nothing that says that in any of the planning process when developers have to go through a permitting process that they aren't aware of the questions that city staff have to kind of procedurally go through for an application, right?
I think that usually I work in the permitting office, or at least I work close to the permitting office, and I think that the sort of logic there is that we've developed these planning policies and land use policies and zoning and all that stuff based on what the city wants to see in our development. And that once we're interacting with the developers, we're asking them to just meet those rules that have been implemented through our kind of our zoning framework. And so we haven't historically asked developers to then kind of answer, how is your proposal going to meet equity? Because we're sort of telling them, okay, here's the rule book. If you play by this rule book, you're meeting our policies. So that's kind of the current logical construction around that.
Given that basis, to date at least, your policies have not accomplished equity in housing in this city.
Indeed, and that's the basis for this project, is to try and do better on that.
Jacques, is the council action memorandum, is that a package of documents? Are we able to access that? Is that online for us to view?
Mikey.
Yeah, they are posted as part of the agenda for any council meeting. So any resolution or ordinance that goes before council should have a link in the agenda that shows you that council action memorandum. I'm happy to send out to the group the blank form so that you can see it as well, if that would be worthwhile.
Thank you,
Jack. Yeah. Okay.
So can I say something? Since I was thinking, so I understand why this would be good, because, as a planner, if you're putting together policies, it's good to have this lens in front of you when you're looking for racial equity. And I'm going to call it racial equity. But also there's equity with, when we talk about wealth as well. So the idea of the developer list for equity was more to, they can build anywhere. Developers can choose to build anywhere, but to allow them to come in and say, we're providing racial equity in this one area because we know that there's a bus line a quarter mile away and there's no sidewalk. So we're going to add a sidewalk so that people can get to our property. We've decided to do 30% of our units for affordable housing, and we're going to try to do it at 50% of, so they can come in and tell you what the things they're doing so that probably you could have provide them more incentives to want to build their projects. So maybe you provide more incentives to them than they would get if they came in with a regular project, because they're outlining ways that they're meeting more racial equity or equity and wealth by coming in and answering some of the questions to this our checklist that we were thinking about. So I was thinking there's both things. You do your policies, but policies don't always work. And we know they don't work because we have an issue right now with affordable housing in our whole county. And that's one of the reasons I was running for office. I just want to make sure that when we do this, it's not like this list should scare people away, but provide them, if you're going to do the list, we're going to look at you in a different way. Maybe we think we're going to work more to help your project because you came in and said that you had these ideas for how you would provide this equity.
Right. Okay. Well, I think I'm hearing that there's interest in applying this kind of lens to our policy work. And Jacques, thanks for pointing out that our current council action memo has got, really captures the spirit, at least, if not the exact wording of these questions. So we'll continue to work at the staff level to provide a tool that will help the task force to make your recommendations moving forward. And then I'm definitely hearing the interest in in a way of querying or of interacting with the development community about how they can, how they are helping to promote equity. And that's a conversation that we can keep having moving forward.
I just wanted to ask a clarifying question for myself. So when you asked us if we want to use these questions to guide our work, are you asking us to look at each of the policies that you spoke about earlier and apply this ourselves? Is that what you were looking for?
We'll support it. What we'd love to hear from you now is, does this look like the right approach to giving you the tools that you can use to evaluate the proposals moving forward? So we've got this policy framework that at the staff level we've summarized and will continue to kind of summarize into a tool that you can use. You can also use a version of these equity questions or an equity checklist as a tool. And so really I'm just asking if that will be a useful tool for the task force in doing your work moving forward. And it's sounding like probably so. I see at least a hand or two. And I also don't want to get us too bogged down in this because I have another set of questions I wanted to share with you all.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
So I also, there's going to be a lot of neighborhoods that's upset if we do make recommendations to, add housing, types in other neighborhoods. So I think this also keeps the whole process legit. So it doesn't look like this is just some sort of academic, oh, this would be a fun little planner's dream in order to do this. This is going to kind of keep us out of hot water on both sides because there is this whole save our suburbs type of nonsense that's going on. And I think we just need to have a very linear approach to the reasoning why we're making our recommendations. So this helps me.
Thanks, Ryan. And really also to build on that is that it makes the statement that the proposed changes or policies are not arbitrary, that we're not picking on folks just to be picking on folks or it just looks good. We're solving a problem here. So there's nothing arbitrary about it. So thank you for bringing that up.
Okay. Well, we'll keep on working on this and turning it into something that that will help your conversation moving forward. I have now actually the meat of the conversation that I wanted to have tonight, I'll try to move more quickly than I usually do, is to try and bounce off of some of the questions that would help to frame this project from this point forward. And I'm asking the task force to think about whether you have input that you want us to carry to the City Council next Tuesday, as well as to the Planning Commission, and to continue to work on moving forward. So this slide just summarizes real quick. We're working on trying to promote housing supply affordability and choice, and we're doing that by looking at our housing growth strategy. And the plan is to still continue to grow and try to support more affordability in our higher density areas, our centers and corridors, but then to work on infill in those lower density in our single family areas. And we know that there are quite a few considerations that we need to try to keep in mind as we're evaluating those. One is that we need to listen to the community. And we're working on that. We've tried to integrate the direction that that this group has given and to try to really reach out. And we're actually doing some things that we haven't done as much or ever really in planning to this degree of building tools that are going to be really educational and that are going to help other people to communicate about this issue to their friends or to their stakeholders. So we're going to listen to community input. We're doing our internal work on the staff side of evaluating our policies and talking within our work groups about how to move forward with this. And so we've got various different lenses that we're looking at. And now I want to share with you just where the rubber meets the road. How and where should we be doing making changes to our growth strategy. So we have these two sets of tools. We've got infill. Where should it go in the city? And I'm going to break this down a little further in the next slide. Where and what housing types should we actually be allowing? And then on the affordability side, where and how should we try to structure that so that it would actually achieve the goals? So in terms of infill, this yellow map on the right, these are areas that are single family neighborhoods and are kind of low density transition neighborhoods. And our starting assumption at the staff level is that the council has said they want to look at allowing more housing types throughout those areas, those single family and low density areas. But we know from our policies that it's especially appropriate to do infill near centers, near transit and transportation choices, and near things like schools and parks and other opportunities. We know that there are some areas of our city where we don't want to direct a lot of growth. And on the left, this little map here shows, you know, we've got green areas that are our natural areas, our steep sloped areas, our parks. Clearly, those are not places that we want to be directing growth to go. And we also know that we kind of have two tiers with it. Throughout our single family areas, there's a question of, okay, what should be allowed there? But then when you get close to our key corridors where you've got transit service, should that be another level of development? So we feel as though we already have a good sense from the city council about where should we be doing infill. But here's the question I wanted to bounce to the group here. Do you have a sense yet about what housing types the city should be promoting in our single family areas? These little pictures here, up in the top left, we've got a single family house and an ADU, an accessory dwelling unit. That's what's allowed throughout the city's neighborhoods right now, today. You can go and build that throughout our neighborhoods. Everything else you see on this list falls in the category of infill of missing middle housing types, but none of that other stuff is allowed in all that yellow area in the vast majority of our city. Does the task force first clearly feel that we should be adding more housing types to that list? And if so, do you have any sense yet about which housing types and how dense you think is appropriate? And I'd love to hear questions or if there are some perspectives about this from the task force, I'd love to hear those.
So this is Sarah. Can I say something? What I like about townhomes is that you can have bigger units that are that could provide, like you could do a townhome and you could have a smaller unit. So you could provide for two types of people to live in the townhome. So you could have someone who owns a unit who they can afford that because it's smaller, but then they can have a smaller unit that's more like an ADU that could be a part of that. So then you could have someone living there that could had a different, maybe it's a smaller unit, like 600 square feet. So you could have two types of people living there and they can look really nice. They can look like, they can be built to look like single family homes in some way. So they don't ruin the architectural design of the neighborhood. So that's one type I really think would work well in that those neighborhoods.
So when I'm looking at these pictures, I don't know if it's applicable to ask, but like, I know that our short-term problem is people don't have enough housing and we want to increase the housing supply. But when we're thinking about it too, is there a way that we can align that with a longer-term goal of like, as we increase housing supply, are there ways that we can encourage first-time home ownership, especially mm-hmm. in the communities of color? And so that I'm looking at these options and thinking about, like, I know ADUs are everywhere and it'll be a quick solution to some extent, but if it's possible, maybe encouraging another option that would allow for more first, is there a way that we can align those goals to be more intentional about you know, knowing that the city has had these issues with redlining and stuff in the past, how do we encourage and make sure that we're rectifying that as we move into the future, especially thinking about housing supply? Is that...
Thank you. That's a lens that we can try to apply as we think about, well, what housing types are appropriate. Keep going, everybody. What other comments or questions?
When I think about and I hate the term single family neighborhood, so I hope we change the name, but all the yellow areas on the map, to me, it's really a scale thing. So, I mean, if you have different housing types that mimic, you know, standalone houses, I don't see a problem, you know, with that. So, I mean, I don't care how many kitchens are in that house if it's the same scale. So I guess that's where I, you know, would be at.
Elliot, remind me again, what is our goal? Is it 60,000 new units or 6,000? I can't remember what that long-term goal is.
That's right. That's right.
Which is it?
It is about 60,000 units by 2040.
And we're supposed to have 20% of those being affordable by people with 80% or lower.
That's right. 25%.
And that counts as how many units? Hey, let's see, 20% of 60. 3,000.
That would be 15,000.
15,000. We don't stand a snowball's chance of creating that many housing units within the city of Tacoma by trying to limit to just these kinds of housing. It's a small multifamily housing, I think, has to be in there. I think facilities that allow for single room occupancy have to be in there. And they can look like ordinary houses. That's not a problem. But it just strikes me that this is kind of an idealistic looking picture. And we really have to come up with designs and zoning that allows for not highest density in the residential neighborhoods near those corridors, but a small multifamily and that kind of thing. So, otherwise, we can't put that many housing units inside this city.
Elliot, we able to get some type of like pro con list or some type of like what it would look like if you choose this option? What are the opportunity costs or like any way to actually get some type of analysis to what would be the impact if you chose a fourplex versus a tiny mobile home, the tiny mobile house, et cetera, et cetera? Is there a way that we can get some more, is it data or just a little bit more, what type of impact if we were to choose this 50% of this versus 50% of that, where how much housing units could we produce? And maybe that way we can really be able to get more.
Yes, that's a great idea. And I can picture that in my mind. Yeah, we can work on that.
I'm sorry, Andrita.
No, you go ahead.
I, you know, as a person who does not have many knowledge about plots and building and all that wonderful, good, great information. My question is, can we not do zoning for all of them? Like, what is the barrier? And why can't we just figure out how to make it all fit? If this is the missing, like, can we not present all options? I need more explanation.
Sure. Well, right now, you know, in our infinite wisdom as a city, we've said 75% of our housing area can only have this one housing type up here in the corner. So, you know, and that's been longstanding. You know, it's been a tool to, you know, stabilize people's investment. You know, their home is our retirement. You know, it's been a very predictable model. It's been the American dream, you know, so there's reasons behind it. But this is our opportunity to say, what about all these other types? And which ones of those should start to get introduced in other areas?
But my question was, Are you saying that these housing types, as they are now, fit into the single family zoning as it stands?
Right now, only the single family detached is allowed right now. None of this other stuff is allowed.
So my question was, are we not able to edit the zoning so that it can allow for more? Like, are we only able to choose two out of the eight? Like, why is it you have to choose, or why is that the question?
Yeah. Well, that's what's being proposed. Council wants to add more, but they haven't told us what kinds, how dense do they want to go. And so the question is, how could we advise the council about which housing types should be allowed? And I've gotten some great questions already from the task force that would help to, do that pro-con list.
I think that's all the details, because, you're going to go, there's some affluent neighborhoods in Tacoma, and some of them are going to freak out if you say you are not going to put a fourplex in my neighborhood. That's just out of question. But then, some neighborhoods be like, hey, I like this mixed use kind of funkiness. So yeah, bring them all. So it's kind of right sizing them. And then it's kind of a policy decision. Do you allow them in the neighborhoods that want them? That says, yeah, bring it on. And then the other ones are just kind of get a pass. Or do you make it, a policy decision across the whole city? And I don't know what that answer is, because there's also a character and an urban design, conversation there. Because, if a neighborhood's doing great and bringing in tax dollars to pay for our stuff, I don't want to mess with that. But at the same time, I want to be equitable. This is hard. This is a really hard one.
Yeah. Is it safe? I know that we're running close to the end of our time, and is it safe to say, though, that the task force wants to deliver a message that we need to be moving in this direction to council, that we should be allowing more housing types?
My vote would be to allow all of those housing types, but with some kind of scaling down as the geographic areas move away from the centers. I would not put a huge multifamily, or even a small one as your photo, in some of the residential neighborhoods, but I see residential neighborhoods throughout the city that have multifamily units of half a dozen or more in a lot that's not much bigger than the single family lots.
So I wanted to say that, this is Sarah again, that I think what happens is you need to think about design. Like, design guidelines have to be a part of when we're talking about moving into a neighborhood and allowing someone to do something creative. It should have to fit in with what's already existing. So that fourplex right there that you show, if that was put into Proctor and you didn't consider the smaller size, the houses that are there and the style, you would just have an uproar in the neighborhood. And I know we're going to have an uproar no matter what, because you're asking people to think differently about types of housing. But I can tell you right now that people are doing a lot of these things, and it's not public knowledge that they have like an extra unit in their house, or that they have an ADU that's not legal. And so a lot of these things are happening because of just people being priced out of their houses if they didn't rent a unit out. And so I think that allowing for lots of different types of housing will allow more people, like we're trying to do, be able to afford to live there. But I think adding design guidelines when you're coming to a huge developer who's used to designing, say, in like Bellevue, and they want to come to Tacoma, we want to make sure that they are appreciating what Tacoma has already in areas, so that we don't ruin the flavor of neighborhoods. That's just my opinion, as somebody who used to be a city planner, that's going to be important to think about. I'm sure you've already thought about that, though.
Is there also a sustainability component in terms of like more green spaces, less green? Like, I know some of those options had like kind of like more of a community feel, like that cottage type or something, but are there, as we're thinking about encouraging more development, how are we going to incorporate like sustainability or just like more green spaces or environmental impacts to that? Are there I know there's an environmental impact review, but like in terms of like sustainability, just like thinking about green spaces or what's more accessible for community feel to that too. Is that a part of considering in these different housing types?
Absolutely. I mean, we don't want to sort of cover the entire land with structures. There does need to be some balance with green space and yards. And so the question of what housing types just naturally leads into, well, what design features are really critical to make it work? And, this is just a conversation starter. We'll be delving more deeply into this, but.
Elliot, can I take a shot at answering Michaela's question for a second?
Please.
Politically, the only thing that is stopping us is council's tolerance for passing the policy. And the thing that determines council's tolerance for passing that policy is a neighborhood's tolerance for those different housing types. So really it comes down to political power. And if a neighborhood exerts enough political power to say, we do not want these changes, then their council member will not vote for those changes. So your question is valid. There is nothing policy-wise that is stopping us from saying all of these housing types are available. The only thing that's stopping us is the tolerance and political ability of any individual neighborhood to influence enough council members. And I don't know if others agree with that, but that's my political assessment.
Thank you.
I think that's politically correct. And Sarah's suggestion about design compatibility is part of the way to soften that. There's a great example of an intrusive single family home at about 35th and Proctor, where somebody's built a really ultra modern looking house in the middle of a bunch of traditional single family houses. It looks awful, but it's expensive and it's in a good neighborhood. It's the reverse of what we're talking about. So design compatibility, I think, is terribly important, and I'm glad you brought it up, Seth.
Okay.
I guess also my vote would be kind of, if we're going to introduce different housing types in the neighborhood, I just want the lot and the structure to mimic what's already there. But then also, I just think citywide, I would like to see more of a gradient approach from like where our centers are. So like, maybe a block off the designated centers, that's where you have, a little bit more density, and then it gradually steps down. I would like to see that approach. So we're just not saying, oh, the neighborhoods are going to answer all our housing problems. So then we kind of spread those units around.
Ryan, that's the same thing I was saying a while ago. I absolutely agree with you. There has to be some sort of gradient.
Right. Well, I know that this is just the start of a conversation about all this stuff. I see that we're getting to 7:00. There was more stuff that I could share with you, but we'll bring it back next time and maybe find ways to address your questions about the pros and cons as part of that ongoing conversation. But you've also given us, a lot of great considerations and questions about how you would want to evaluate these options. So thank you very much. And go ahead and stop sharing here. With that, I think, we're going to continue to do our work, and we'll have a lot of information to report back to the task force starting next time, because we'll be able to report back on our guidance from council and from the planning commission. And we'll bring some of that analysis and tools back to you as well. Are there some next steps that the group would like us to think about or work on?
Is there a possibility that we could maybe talk about certain parts of the city that are doing that have done some creative zoning, so we could talk about, we could see examples? Like, I'm thinking of up on South State Street and up in that area, and South 8th Street would be a good example of places that have put in more creative types of housing with single family already existing. I just was thinking that so people can see what it looks like in a neighborhood. And these are not neighborhoods that were necessarily single family. They're like some of your, they have some creative zoning names. I don't know what they're called, but those are good examples of how you could put in like row houses that are attached houses, and then people can purchase those, and they might be a lower price than say a standalone single family house. I just think people need examples is what I think to understand better what we're talking about. And in our own city, there are examples, so.
Yes, there. I mean, none of those housing types is, I mean, those all exist in Tacoma. Just a question of where are they allowed, and most of them are only allowed in a small fraction of our city.
Well, if there is interest in developing a equity checklist to give to developers, I'd be glad to try to help think out how that might be formulated. I'm a retired psychologist, and I have some sense of how to gentle people into thinking about things.
Go to DuPont. You know, it's a master plan community, but they mix houses in there really well, and it tends to be more conservative leaning there. So if it works there, it can work somewhere like Tacoma. So go take a look at that. It's a fun little drive. And they have trails.
Yeah. And here in Tacoma, I mean, an example of a mixed housing types neighborhood is, you know, the North Slope is one example, you know, or areas near in the Hilltop, you know, or even Salishan. You know, Salishan is a new project, relatively new, that includes all these different housing types.
But it required that the existing old barracks be destroyed.
That's true.
They did a great job of it. Are we done?
Yeah, I am done with my stuff, but I'd love to hear if there's anything further you know, that the group wants staff to work on. But you've already given us quite a lot of really good feedback. So, Chair, it's up to you. If you have nothing further, and no one else in the group wants to.
Anybody else? Calling for the good of the order. Thank you, Elliot, for a good meeting. Thank you, everyone. And meeting adjourned.